the power, it's the power, 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 power. LSU and Carter, it's the power, power, power. LSU and Carter. Let's freaking go. Patrick Payton is locked in and loaded for your dear beloved LSU Tigers. Patrick Payton, let's freaking go. And the one thing about his stats that doesn't really show in just a typical way, like when you look at the number one rated edge player in the transfer portal, the number two overall player in the portal with 109 tackles, 32 tackles for loss, 16 sacks, but 12 PBUs. Normally that's a number you associate with defensive backs, but Patrick Payton, I have never, and I really do mean this, never have I seen a college defensive end be so freaking good at deflecting passes at the line of scrimmage. If Patrick Payton wasn't an edge player, I would heavily consider telling him to play volleyball. That's how good he is at jumping and blocking down passes. Three forced fumbles. There is a lot to work on in his game. And, you know, I've, over the past couple of years, developed quite a few Florida State sources. And what do they have to say about him? Well, it's not the most glowing reviews regarding Patrick Payton. So we'll talk about the positives and the negatives and release a film study later in the week. And to me, an even bigger commitment is one that's actually going to play roughly double the amount of snaps as Patrick Payton will play next year. And that is LSU center Braylon Moore. Obviously, we've been talking about him for weeks because whoever you are watching this right now, we have been leading up to LSU needing a good center. Because last year, LSU center play wasn't where it needed to be. That is not entirely on DJ Chester. And I understand that it's not been well received how critical I was of DJ Chester, but I put that more at the feet of the LSU coaching staff, if anything else. Braylon Moore is going to be good, right? At least a borderline solid center. When you take a look at actual center grades across the SEC, ours were not all that great. And the difference was a lot of the other centers that didn't have great Pro Football Focus grades got swapped out. We decided to keep playing DJ Chester at center, and I think that was a big, big, big mistake. So this was a huge day for LSU football. And of course, Brian Kelly did a press conference yesterday. We'll go through some of the big points of emphasis. The one thing, though, that I do think it's very important to ask Brian Kelly, are there going to be any coaching changes? There does need to be at least one coaching change or one coaching addition. Who is the new tight end coach and special teams coordinator going to be? That is a big deal because LSU, obviously, over the past couple of seasons, has had really good tight end play. And during the Brian Kelly tenure, we have not had the absolute sharpest special teams. Obviously, a lot of that was at the beginning of the Brian Kelly tenure. So there you go. Now, welcome to PHL. All new viewers, old viewers, people that have been with us for years, I really appreciate each and every one of you. Big shout out to Dex making the new PHL offseason intro. Obviously, this offseason is going to be long. It's going to be arduous. And I think this one's going to be tougher considering we have so many new players and we really don't know how it's going to piece together. I can say this, though. To be comfortable with this roster is a difficult thing because it's so many new players. But I'm going to give you one big, and I mean it is huge, 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 huge bit of confidence. The guys that we brought in doesn't necessarily make the ceiling of LSU ridiculously high, right? Because a lot of the guys that we're bringing in, if they were good enough to jump to the NFL, they would have done it. But a lot of these guys would have been drafted. In particular, Monsieur Delane would have been drafted. Patrick Payton would have been drafted. And now with the NIL, they're kind of in this middle range where they can get paid, obviously, a pretty nice six-figure sum of money to come play another year of college football and improve their draft stock at the same time and get the chance to play in the Southeastern Conference, which obviously increases their brand. And most importantly, they get to play for LSU, which is to me, the brand that increases your individual worth more than any other brand that we have in all of college football. I don't think that's necessarily a biased statement either. I understand it is, but I do think it is also based in fact. So, big day for LSU football. Type Y for yes, type in for no if you can hear me loud and clear. We have a super chat right off the jump here with Mr. Jared, who's had a Mac, LA Mom. It's a good super chat right here from Jared. Last time we brought in a Pat P to LSU, it turned out to be pretty good. He's a pretty good player. Huh? 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 Friend of the channel. Now, this is obviously the big topic du jour. Y'all, the college football playoff this weekend was a stinker in terms of the games that were actually played. It was a stinker. But what does that have to do with LSU? Because there's plenty of shows you can go and watch a full breakdown of everything that happened. And obviously, a lot of you are fans of Power Hour SEC. I deeply appreciate that. We obviously have a Power Hour SEC breakdown of Tennessee and Ohio State. I have never dealt with a more obnoxious fan base in Ohio State. I have never felt a fan base feel like they need to be the victims more than Ohio State fans, the way they reacted to my Ohio State versus Tennessee film study. Never seen anything like it. Never seen anything like it. And I know you shouldn't paint any fan base with a broad brush. But, man, I said one thing. When the whole film study, I was pointing out how Ohio State had a far better team than Tennessee, I was waxing poetic. You would have thought I was Maurice Claret the way I was talking about Ohio State. You would have thought I was wearing a sweater vest during my breakdown. But I said one thing. I said one thing negative about Ohio State, and every Ohio State fan had to let me know about it. They are losers. Losers. A good chunk of them. Losers. Brutus can shove it. Shove it! Now, we do need to talk about the college football playoff. Two things were blatantly clear when it comes to this year's LSU's team when it comes to the college football playoff. Obviously, the 12-team playoff, like I have said for a very long time, wasn't going to be good. It was going to be exciting, but who has been a bigger vocal person against the 12-team playoff than me? I understand there's bigger college football personalities who have basically said almost the same thing, but who has for so long talked about conference and schedule and balance. Me. It's been me. It's one of the few things I've been right about. And sometimes you got to pat yourself on the back. The conference schedules are so imbalanced. Y'all, I this will come off so bad, and I understand it's perfectly fine. But I don't know how far off Tennessee was to even LSU or South Carolina or anyone else. And how do we know this? Well, Tennessee, who I have covered all year, done a film study on every one of their games, they moved ahead of Arkansas as the second most watched team on any of my network, any of them. Okay, obviously the Commanders, NFL's on a different level, but they are big for me, and I love Tennessee. I do. But one thing that was blatantly clear was they had one of the easier SEC schedules. They didn't have to play Texas. They didn't have to play South Carolina. They didn't have to play Ole Miss. And they didn't have to play us, right? They played pretty much every team that was 500 or below in the SEC. Arkansas, they played. Vanderbilt, they played. Mississippi State, they played. Kentucky, they played. So the conference imbalances are a very real thing. Now, why is that important? Well, LSU, to me, going into the season, had one of the easier schedules. But now, I think it's going to be different next year. I think LSU's schedule is going to be way harder than what it was this year. Way harder. But two things happen that I think is going to help LSU going into the playoff next year. Number one, the committee wants to avoid what happened this past weekend. So judging by the roster and judging by the way the rest of the SEC is, I think most of us would think LSU next year is going to be ranked anywhere preseason in that 9 to 17 range, probably somewhere in between. So we're going to be one of those fringe playoff teams. So if that's going to be the case, you wanted Indiana to struggle, which they did. You wanted SMU to get the doors blown off of them, which they did. So I do think next year the committee is going to be more in favor of putting in a 3-loss SEC team, which very well could be us. And the second thing, we now know how bad we might have been this year. But yeah, I mean, I think if LSU played SMU, what would SMU would probably be favored by 2.5? So as bad as we were compared to our standard, y'all, LSU struggling this year is something that every team dealt with. Really think about it. Name one team outside of Oregon and outside of Texas that you would consider right now as the best version of themselves over the past 5 years. Maybe Clemson, who actually made the playoff. Maybe Ohio State, who I think is the best team in the field. Y'all, a lot of teams did not play up to standard where we thought they were going to be. We saw a lot of really weird losses this year. So what does all of that mean? What's your major point, Carter? Well, I had to have this big lead up to share with you that what we went through as a team is actually something that's a little bit more common throughout college football. And what we know, based on the teams that actually got in and got their asses beat, is that, number one, it's hard as hell to play on the road. But number two, the teams that got in weren't necessarily better than the teams that were out. They got in because they were able to finagle losing less games than the other teams that barely missed out. So the bottom line is college football is about the loss column. That is what it's always been about. It used to not be as much about that, but now with the 12-team playoff, the easiest thing to point to is loss avoidance. Okay? Loss avoidance is the single most important thing. The problem is LSU, when you look at the rest of the SEC, and we have all offseason to discuss this, there are so many losable games on the schedule. So many. Okay. So many. And I'll say one more thing, and we'll get into more of an LSU-specific thing. I hate to say this as a college football channel, but I'm not going to say I dislike college football, but the way things are structured right now is so bad. From the portal to the portal opening before the season even ends, to no structure with NIL, no transparency really at all with NIL, conference realignment, no more Pac-12. And the biggest thing, the absolute biggest thing, the thing that is most important to me in any sport is schedule structure. It is the single most important thing. And I don't know how we fix the schedule structures in college football without more realignment or without adding conference games. I really do think one thing that would make a lot of this better, and a lot of you watch this channel, the College Football Nerds, they tweeted this out, and I'm not able to watch them, obviously, because you know I'm busy creating content all the time, but I've had this opinion. It hit me like a ton of bricks, I think a month and a half, 2 months ago. I think we need to add an extra game to the season and get rid of conference championship weekend and just go straight into the playoff. I think we need an extra data point because with the way the conference schedules are now, we must increase schedule sample size. if we know losses matter so much, well, the teams that avoid playing certain teams in the conference have such huge advantages. I mean, it is so, so, so blatantly obvious. All right. I thought Tennessee's team last year was better than Tennessee's team this year. I thought Tennessee's team 2 years ago was better than Tennessee's team this year. But why did they get in? Why they didn't play LSU, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Texas? They beat one very, very, very good team on their schedule, which was Alabama, which who we know had very bad road issues. And they were beat by double digits by Georgia, lost to a mediocre Arkansas team, and, you know, got their asses kicked yesterday. So how are they the 9 seed? Well, they weren't a bad team. They weren't a bad team at all. They were very good. But they weren't great. I want great teams in the playoffs. Okay? Now, next thing. I want to get back into LSU, and I promise we'll discuss the entire college football playoff schedule. There are a few big questions. And the one that I keep getting back to is, what is LSU going to do with Joe Sloan? You know, there's still a strong piece of me that thinks they're just going to run him back and bring in a tight end coach. But we really don't know. We really don't know at this point. You know, the next thing, obviously, is, what do we do about bowl season? Y'all, we are, what, 9 days away from LSU's bowl game versus Baylor? There's really hardly anyone asking me to do Baylor breakdowns. I promise you, every single week before every single regular season game, people are asking me about breakdowns, even the Vanderbilt game. All right, hey, when are you going to do a Vanderbilt breakdown? But to me, Baylor is going to be such a fascinating game. Okay? Now, before we get into this next topic, I want to shout out all the other LSU sports that are going on right now. We're obviously going to dive a lot deeper into LSU women's basketball when the conference season begins to start. I'm excited about Matt McMahon, obviously, when conference season rolls around. But as you guys know, there's been a few things going on with me personally and my family. My father-in-law has a big medical procedure tomorrow. Huge. Okay. I won't get into what exactly it is because it is big. This was a tough week for me. Really, really, really tough. And thankfully, to modern medicine and a lot of your thoughts and prayers, he's still alive. I was able to have a conversation with him yesterday. So I'm having to do a lot of driving. He's in a very special facility multiple hours away from me. So once again, I say all of that. That's a reason why certain live schedules have been moved around. There hadn't been as many like breakdowns of every single commitment. I promise you, we're going to try and get to each and every one of those. But I know a lot of you believe in a metaphysical power. Whoever that may be, please pray to that. Or if you're not a believer, please, your positive thoughts go a very long way. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And I appreciate that, Charles. Appreciate that, Blaine. Now, Blaine says, I'd run it back with Joe Sloan, but with an experienced QB coach. But he is a QB coach. That's a problem. Okay? That's a problem. Alan says, they are not counting strength of schedule in order to get the smaller schools into the playoffs to increase profits, viewership, and interest. So, Alan, I hate to say that you are wrong, especially after that big, like, emotional thing I just shared. But there isn't anything more wrong in the history of wrong than this comment. Okay? There's like literally, and Alan, you know I got a lot of respect for you. I guarantee you the powers that be at ESPN were praying that Alabama was getting in before SMU. I will also share this. spoke to a bowl official. All right, so for those that don't know, every bowl game, or every game, there are bowl officials at the big games, right, to scout the teams that they could potentially bring in for their bowls. All right. Alabama not getting into the playoff really screwed a lot of things up for, like, bowl hierarchy for the lower tier teams. I guarantee you, they wanted Alabama in. Alabama is the biggest draw in college football. Alabama, Ohio State, Texas, Notre Dame, Georgia. They're on a different level when it comes to viewership than all the others. And then in the next tier, it's us, Michigan, and a few others. All right. Not SMU. Not SMU. SMU generates a fraction of the viewership that Alabama generates. I know it doesn't make sense if you were to look at media markets because you have SMU in Dallas and you have Alabama in Tuscaloosa, but that's just how it is. All right. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the LSU roster. And, you know, I kind of hinted at this last week, wink, wink, nod, nod, that one guy that was very interesting was Javian Toviano. And Brian Kelly said, hey, we're moving him to safety, and he's hanging around. You know, he's the profile of a lot of guys that enter the portal. Now, could Toviano still leave? Yeah, sure. But the bottom line is the staff still believes in him. So we'll see how this position switch actually works out for him. And I hope it does work out for him. All right. But the big thing is when you bring in more defensive back talent, it makes the life so much easier of all the other defensive players in your backfield. All right. So Mansoor Delane, if he delivers, he will make the play of the other defensive backs on LSU better. The problem for LSU is outside of Zay Alexander in a few games, there really wasn't that star that makes the life easier on every other defensive back in that backfield. All right. And I view defensive back play as very collaborative. And at the same time, very isolated, because if you're playing a lot of man coverage, it often comes down to you just making a play or the quarterback, you know, making a bad throw. But if I can trust Mansoor Delane to guard one side of the field, it just makes everybody's job so much easier. Okay. So I'm really excited, hopefully, for Toviano to get a lot of safety bowl reps. I'm also pumped up that Zay Drian is out the door, and we can see what the bowl will look like for some of the other young defensive backs on this roster. The next thing is, you know, I wanted to wait until about 30 minutes into this. Zay Drian, he is gone. And he goes to Ole Miss. Now, I am going to be very interested to see if he actually has a big season at Ole Miss. Now, I shared this on Patreon, but I'll share it publicly here. It is interesting because one of Sage Ryan's first games as a true freshman, Lane Kiffin literally toyed with him. And I thought they were just freshman mistakes, but we're here. And he had a very up-and-down career. Now, what's interesting is the PFF grades actually had Zay Drian as a pretty solid player over his time at LSU. But we have eyeballs. We watch every rep. And he wasn't really that good. And he was dramatic off the field. So, Zay Drian to Ole Miss. Is this a big loss for LSU? It's not. In fact, it's a massive W. But the reason why it's important to see if he actually revives his career at Ole Miss is, let's just say, out of nowhere, he becomes an all-SEC player. Then we really need to evaluate what has been wrong with our defensive back development. Is there something we're doing wrong? Because we have had some weird instances of DBs leaving. Like, for instance, Deuce Chestnut went back to Syracuse and turned into a solid player back at Syracuse. Why was he so bad during his single season at LSU? So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I still can't believe Ole Miss went out there and got him. I think part of why Lane Kiffin did that is to stick it to LSU or to get some intel. Maybe that's part of it as well. All right, let's go to the GOAT. Sage played out of position. Okay. This is insanity that I'm reading this. He played every single position. Literally, he played every single position in the secondary, and he wasn't good at any of them. He played a lot of outside corner. He played a lot of slot corner. He played a lot of safety. All right. He literally played every position and was never good at any of them. Okay. And I get that, Josh, but if I believe Ole Miss went and got Sage Ryan, well, if they did that, and they already had Womack, couldn't Womack have done the same thing? And that's what's so weird about it, Carvis. Yeah, PFF loves Sage Ryan. They do. They do. And I have a few reasons why I think that. Number one is PFF is such a down-to-down grading service that Sage down-to-down wasn't the absolute worst. It's just when he had a disastrous play, it was disastrous. Okay? So there you go. Now, coming up next. Where is LSU's next huge, and I mean huge, position of need on this team when it comes to the portal? And one very key thing that Brian Kelly said over the weekend.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's XYANImaging.com. All righty. So, Brian Kelly, first off, before the season or before this portal season began, he said he wanted to bring in 12 guys. I like that Brian Kelly wasn't rigid. All right, a lot of older coaches are rigid. You can't be rigid in this current day and age in college football. Dabo learned that. So he went out there and bought some portal players this offseason. Okay. I do think one massive thing was Brian Kelly said, hey, I wanted to only bring in 12, but now I want to bring in 15. You have to be fluid. You just do, because you don't know which opportunities are going to arise. That was very key. But then Brian Kelly said, hey, there are two areas where I still want to address in the portal. He said in the trenches up front, and then he also said in the back end of his defense. So, you know, there are some interesting players. There was another safety from, I believe, Jacksonville State that entered the portal. But yeah, I mean, I'm for it. I think those are the two positions I would say as well that LSU needs to address. I am a little shocked that they didn't go get a running back in the portal. That still could happen. That still very well could happen. Maybe another tight end. Still, I would love to see it. Now, let's talk a little bit more about Patrick Payton. We had a few other people fly in here. Y'all, he is so unfreaking believably gifted. And he is just this lanky, active defensive end who reminds you a lot of Kalyvon Chaisson. Not necessarily the most polished pass rusher you'll ever see, but unfreaking believably long, has a really good motor and run and chase skills. So a lot of his sacks are him turning the corner and just keeping that motor moving and chasing guys down. And he is really good. I will repeat it again. I have never seen a defensive end so freaking good at batting balls down at the line of scrimmage. That is so key. I mean, that was a big, big, big game changer last night. Tennessee's offense really sputtered because Ohio State's defensive ends are really good at that very thing. Batting balls down at the line of scrimmage. It messes with your quarterbacks. It also messes with your offensive tackles. You know, Tennessee didn't have good offensive tackle play. Went up against arguably the best pair of rush ends in the country, Sawyer and JT. And they were just batting balls down when they weren't getting home. Patrick Payton is a real deal all around defensive end. Now, there is something else. And I understand we want to be very, very, very positive about all our transfers like I have been. But things did not go the way that they were supposed to go in 2024. Now, did Patrick Payton still do some really good things this year? Yes. But one massive thing changed. Jared Verse and Braden Fisk both left. They both left. And those guys were essentially both first-round picks. Both guys have been really good in the NFL their first year. So Patrick Payton was a huge beneficiary of that because he played on that defensive line alongside them. And this past season was a little hit or miss. There was a lot of Florida State fans that were questioning if he was as hungry as he was in years past. You know, he flirted with the portal. There was a lot of portal drama with him at Florida State. And this was one of those situations where it was probably better for all parties involved to move in a different direction. So they're I'm telling you, the biggest thing, the biggest red flag that people gave me was, is Patrick Peyton going to fully be locked in for LSU? And only he can answer that. But if he gives it 110%, like he did for Florida State in their undefeated run, we got ourselves a steal. We got ourselves a real freaking deal Holyfield playmaker who was long, who was lanky, and a different type of player than our edge presence was this season. Okay? And here's the thing. Patrick Peyton better come in ready to compete, because the snaps just aren't going to be given. We have spent a lot of resources in the portal at defensive end. And we still have Gabriel Relaford coming back. Dylan Carpenter is still around, even though he's not close in terms of pedigree as some of these other names. So hopefully Patrick Peyton comes in starving. And if he does, with Kevin Peoples coaching him, holy crap. It could get nasty. It could get nasty. But it is without reasonable doubt that Braylon Moore is the single most important transfer that they brought in. It's just blatantly clear. Okay. Now, next thing. Who's going to start at offensive tackle in the bowl game? So you're starting bowl offensive line. Tyree Adams at left tackle. Your center will be obviously DJ Chester. Right guard will be Bo Bordelon. Right tackle will be Miles Frazier. And your left guard will be Paul Mbenga. Okay? So that's your starting offensive line. Big audition for Tyree Adams. We're fans of Tyree Adams here. Had a medical procedure earlier this year. So we'll see what happens when he gets the opportunity to start and play a full game. Now, it would be crazy for me to do 40 minutes of a show and not shout out Jaden freaking Daniels and what he did today. Holy crap. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, both big days. BTJ, another big day. Malik Nabers set a rookie reception record. Shout out to them. Cordell Fly got himself an INT. Thanks to Kyle Pitts. So big NFLSU day. So shout out to Jaden freaking Daniels in particular. All right. It is amazing on the Commanders channel, Power NFL, which it in some ways is a Commanders channel. They are by far the most popular team on there. I freaking love them. Now, I can't play the full clip, but we do have a viral clip going on. Jaden Daniels' game-winning touchdown pass was eerily similar to Garrett Nussmeier's game-tying touchdown pass versus Ole Miss. A cover two beater on an in-breaker with a lot of anticipation. If you want to see those two throws back-to-back, go to twitter.com/PowerHourLSU. All right? Let's go to Sibley. What does Baylor do well, and can the Tigers beat them? Sibley, I'm going to be as honest as I possibly can. I've not looked at that game at all. I've not. Because we're still in portal opt-out season. To me, the biggest thing, though, is this game means a lot more to Baylor than it does to us. Obviously, our program's on a completely different level. And their team, you can make a very strong case, is going to be more motivated. You know, the Aranda years have been somewhat like the Brian Kelly years at LSU. You've had some success. You had an early conference championship game appearance. And since then, it's been kind of not as good. Now, obviously, our last couple of seasons have been better than Baylor's last couple of seasons. But this is definitely a bigger game for Baylor than it is us. It's in their home state. Obviously, Dave Aranda is going to have his locker room fired up to play versus his old team. You know they're going to want to have this so bad for them. And if you're LSU, you're probably looking at yourself in the locker room saying, hey, how did we not make this playoff field?
Okay.
That's right, Pegasus. Justin Jefferson had a big day as well. How about I rank the 2025 LSU wide receiver room, as in who would be the number one option? Well, it's Aaron Anderson. And he might set an LSU record for targets next year. He might. Now, you do bring in Barry and Brown. You do bring in Nick Anderson. You do bring in some... you still retain some interesting pieces. Kyle Parker's back. Kylan Billiott's back. You know, there are some big things that these incoming receivers need to work on. Obviously, Nick Anderson, a lot of it is just health. He's got to be healthy. But Barry Brown has been unfreaking believably durable. And he is so fast, and he is obviously one of the best special teams players in the history of the SEC. But overall, as a complete wide receiver, there's room for him to grow. Has some drops issues. Obviously, as a tackle breaker, we did a film study on him earlier this week. There is room to grow there as well. Let's go to Cliff. This game should matter a lot for recruiting in Texas for LSU. I don't know. I don't know how much that means anymore. I really don't. Are you the highest bidder? Yes or no? Yeah, I mean, I think these bowl games, as far as recruiting is concerned, used to be a bigger deal. But from a momentum standpoint, would it be nice to win one of these or win another? Yeah, would it be nice to finish with only four losses instead of five? Sure. Sure. Okay. Let's go to this Twitter DM. Carter, who do you believe will be the backup quarterback in this game? Well, I'm glad you mentioned this. This is from Anthony. AJ Swan. Now, I give AJ Swan a lot of credit. There are so many backup quarterbacks that entered the portal and didn't play in the bowl game. Now, I don't know if AJ Swan had something in his contract language that said, hey, you need to stay all the way through the bowl game. That might have been the reason, but not a lot of portal quarterbacks have stayed throughout the season. Penn State, a very active backup quarterback, committed to Missouri today. So I give AJ Swan a lot of credit for doing the right thing and playing in the bowl game. Okay.
Let's see. Thank you, Graham. I appreciate that. Well, Pegasus, hope you're not going through anything too bad yourself, man. You're a big part of this channel. No, I don't think they can do that. I mean, I guess they could. I mean, what if Darnold leads him to a Super Bowl? Yeah, obviously, Justin Jefferson likes Sam Darnold a lot. But there would be people in Minnesota's brass that would say, well, Justin Jefferson, maybe he's a reason why Sam Darnold looks good. So if he can do that, he can make J.J. McCarthy look good too. I don't know. But Sam Darnold's good. I mean, he's really good. I know some of it is Kevin O'Connell, but still. The Saints should go get Justin Fields from Pittsburgh. Yeah, I don't know his full details with the Steelers. Obviously, Price will play a big role in this. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to it because the Saints don't have, you know, a backup dual threat quarterback outside of Taysom Hill who's hurt and old. You know, on the cheap, it would make sense. So I don't hate this, even though I'm not the biggest Fields guy. But, you know, now that this is a bigger discussion point in college football, what is your price? What is your price? In the past 3 weeks, I've spoken to three different people who negotiate price. I spoke with one who actually does things from the collective standpoint. I spoke to one agent and also spoke to a player's brother. And all three of them have said the price starts off higher than what is expected. And that's just typical negotiations, right? You're, I go through this quite a bit in my my side industry, which is, you know, DJing events, DJing weddings. And it's tough because different teams have different needs for you. Same thing is true with different brides, different weddings have different things that you need them to do. Are you a good fit with the bride and groom? Are you a good fit with the team? How do you fit with the team? Are there any red flags with your profile? You would be shocked in all industries that the highest bidder might not be the right fit for you. But I will say, as far as price is concerned, LSU, just the appearance of being in the money and being aggressive lets me know that Brian Kelly is not rigid. He is not a rigid coach. He took a different approach to the portal. And even mentioned this in the press conference yesterday. Now, this press conference yesterday wasn't as revealing as his other press conferences, but, you know, he talked a little bit more about the young player approach that he had last year. And when you really break it down, LSU's team was very young. And that's not a problem if your young players are Jeremiah Smith. Okay, that's not a problem if you have Julio Jones 2.0 on the outside. Where it becomes a problem is if those players aren't that good. And the thing that's made it so much harder for younger year two, year one, three-star middle-tier players playing is you are playing so many freaking adults, old-ass players. So one thing LSU has done, wink, wink, nod, nod, really listening really closely, is they wanted to get older. Brian Kelly kind of vaguely mentioned this, but this showed. And one thing that really held us back was a lot of our older players were also bad. So we had older players who weren't the best leaders, and then we had younger guys who were playing against grown-ass men. Year four, year five, and year six players. All right, perfect example. And this is from a game that we won, so it's not really anything to be angry about. So we had, for Arkansas, a year six wide receiver who was the best wide receiver in the SEC. He overall had a good game versus us, Andrew Armstrong. And he scored his first touchdown on the same side of the field as a year two corner. All right. So he had a year two corner going up against a year six wide receiver. Y'all, there were so many of these types of matchups that we had to play each and every week, and we were not winning those matchups because you had an 18, 19-year-old going up against a 22 to 23-year-old player. Or we had an 18, 19, 20-year-old going up against 21, 22, and 23 four- and five-star level talents. So I can tell you without reasonable doubt that a lot of the money that LSU has spent and these players that they have brought in, we don't know if they are elite. And it's a high likelihood that most of these guys that we brought in are not elite football players. Because if they were truly elite, like I've said, they would have gone to the NFL. But the one thing, and I want this to be your major takeaway, is that it's not always about finding elite guys. It's hard to find elite guys. And the guys that are elite know they're elite and they cost the most. Sometimes you need a floor. Now, I'll be honest. The more I watched Monster Delane, the more some things started to concern me just a little bit. But for the most part, I was like, hey, this guy would have been drafted. And he would have been the best corner on our team this year. If we needed him to play safety, he would have been the best safety on our team. One guy raises the floor of the whole team. Might not raise the ceiling, but he made everybody else better. Jack Pyburn. We've not really seen him be a full-time starter just yet. That's part of the reason why I wanted to enter the portal. He played 350-ish snaps this past season. Our starting defensive ends both played over 500. But what I know about Jack Pyburn is he might not be the absolute highest ceiling player, but I know he's a damn good football player. Damn good. So, yeah. You know, a lot of the money that would have gone to Bryce Underwood, this money theoretically went to these other players. Bryce Underwood has a higher ceiling than any player that we brought in. True. But our floor was raised. Now, to win national championships, you need to reach ceilings, right? Ceilings really matter. But do they? I don't know if they do as much as they used to be. Do we think what happened in college football this season is a one-year trend? Do we think it's a one-year trend? Or do we think it's something that will happen as time moves on, as more teams have more players coming in and out, portaling in and out? Maybe your team just needs a decent floor to find a way to get into the field. Let's go to Dwayne. He said 5 years or less of this same model in college football's viewership will be like the NBA's 48% decline. So I'll be honest, Dwayne. You know, when we used to do our 3 and 4 hour shows, won't be doing one of those tonight, but you know, we talk a lot of NBA. We will obviously a little bit deeper into the season, deeper into the offseason. But yes, the NBA is in sharp decline viewership wise. Maybe a little misleading, but checks are still cashing, whatever. You know, like I said earlier, I do not like a lot of different things about college football. It's not the players getting paid. It's not necessarily the portal. It's just how jumbled this stuff is. It is such a mess. Okay? I'm not sure if anything is being done optimally right now in college football. And that's what happens when, you know, capitalism leads itself to Oregon joining the Big Ten. I mean, it is just how it is. Whatever it may be, whatever you want to point to as to why college football is a mess, viewership is not going to go down. I just don't think it's going to go down because we still have one thing in college football that reigns it king over the other sports, and that is scarcity. Scarcity still matters. This season flies by. And I understand we view college football as a 12-game season. It really isn't anymore. It's more of a 10.5-ish game season. Because you still have running wins. And because the portal is such a big freaking deal now, if you aren't in the playoff hunt, you're already kind of turning the page for the next season. Scarcity matters. So could I see some college football fans just leaving the sport for good? Yes, but I think you'll see that more at the Group of Five level than you will at the Power Four level. I will tell each and every one of you this. I would love to look each and every one of you into the eyes. You might not like what's going on with college football from an LSU vantage point, but if you were a Group of Five program, you would hate the way college football is right now. All your best players are leaving, coming and going. Let's go to Mark. With all the success at the receiver position in the NFL, why can't LSU recruit 5-star receivers out of high school? All right. Well, we did. We had DeCorian Moore. He went to the highest bidder, which was Oregon. Do what you want to do. Texas outbid us for a lot of guys that we were kind of sort of in the running for. We're in it for French. We're in it for Khalid Lockett, who I liked a lot. In this last class, we got Cam Coleman on campus. He went to Auburn. Last class, Ryan Williams went to Alabama. He was from Alabama. Jeremiah Smith from Florida, who is the best receiver in college football, went to Ohio State. They put a lot of guys in the NFL as well. So, yeah, I mean, we recruited 5-star receivers. But you don't need them. You don't. You don't. Yes, Chef, you are right. The school calendar messes with the transfer portal. But this is where that falls hollow for me. Is that, like, football players, academics, it's always been treated separately than everybody else's, right? I mean, there's always exceptions made for football players. They're always the first to get their classes scheduled. So you could bend things around to make this work for college athletics. You really can. With summer school, I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do. Fix it. Fix it. Because it's hard to fix the dates to move the season up or back. but make exceptions for football players when it comes to the academic calendar. The next thing I would say about the five-star wide receiver thing is a cost. Always remember this. You need two hurdles to clear for a five-star wide receiver. Number one, you actually need them to sign. And then number two, you not only need them to play, you need them to also catch the football. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. He's here. He's here, baby. The Master Blaster. What's good, Donnie? The Master Blaster. He's here. And he's ready to go. All right, in the next 5 minutes, I'll answer as many as you possibly can. I do have to drive a pretty long distance tomorrow. But I don't mind going all night. If the supers keep flying in, trust me, we'll keep it going. Top super chatter of the evening is Mr. Jared Addison. Nothing new for him. He's won that title quite a few times. How did everybody do in their fantasy football playoffs? I will be your sounding board, because as someone who plays a lot of fantasy football and spends a lot of time studying fantasy football and actually won a lot of money playing fantasy football last year, I had the worst year of my life playing fantasy football. And the funny thing about it was I had a lot of Jaden Daniels, who's been one of the best players in fantasy this year. Still managed to lose. Whatever. Still managed to lose. Pegasus asks, Carter, why do you think they ran back the schedule? So, for those that don't know, it lets you say you're new to PHL. All right. The single one thing that I care the most about is scheduling. Oh, God. I freaking love schedules. It is the single most important thing to me in sports. How do you format? How do you schedule? All right. It's so big. So big. Now, why is it such a big deal to me? Well, it's everything. Sports isn't just who you are. See, that's the thing. We are fans of LSU. You are here along with 312 of you. I would say across platforms, let's just say there actually is 312 of you watching right now. Sometimes that number could be inaccurate. I would say 270 of you are probably LSU fans. 270. And that's fine. But sports is about your opponent. You got to win a game. And in order to win a game, you have to have an opponent on the other side. So who you play matters not as much as who you are, but it almost matters as much as who you are. Yeah, I went on my long rant about Tennessee and how lucky they were with their schedule this year. LSU. Our schedule got a lot harder. The way Florida and South Carolina feel about their program now was not how everyone felt about them going into last year. They are both really good football teams. Both will probably be ranked going into next year. And that doesn't include Alabama, who we still have to play. That doesn't include Ole Miss. Doesn't include Clemson. So why would the SEC decide to run back the schedules? Because it was such a big advantage for Texas and Tennessee to have such easier schedules than everybody else in the SEC. It was huge, huge for them. Well, I have a few theories why they decided to run it back. Number one is that they didn't want the stress of moving things around again. This is a big problem throughout college football. Now, is there a piece of me that is excited that the college football playoff issue that I have been telling you guys for so long was going to be an issue actually happened? Yes, because now people actually see how big of a deal it is who you play. It is everything. It is everything. So Texas and Tennessee will get to run it back with a far easier schedule than some of the other teams in the SEC. They run it back because it's easy to explain. Greg Sankey could go to everyone and say, look, we don't know what happened. We were deciding to go to 9 conference games or 8 conference games. We decided to stay with 8. And then everyone thought with 8 conference games, we were going to have 1 permanent and a rotating door of 7 other teams. SEC wasn't ready to do that. Now, why wasn't the SEC ready to do that? Well, they weren't ready to get rid of Florida, Georgia. They weren't ready to get rid of, well, Texas and Oklahoma, which they would have to get rid of for that to work, in theory. So running back the schedule gives the SEC more time to figure this out. And it also allowed them to have a 2-year sample size run of the college football playoff. So that's why they're running it back. We had Andy Staples on this offseason. We'll get him on again pretty soon. Andy Staples and I agreed on something. One major theory is that the SEC might be expanding again. Now, I am not a powerful enough person to know who the SEC would go at. People that say they know something about conference realignment, they really don't know anything. Because it's just too big of a story for a regular person to even know. Remember, one of the most powerful people in the Big Ten was in London, England, when USC and UCLA news broke that they were joining the Big Ten. Okay, very few people really even know about realignment. But one thing that I've heard from TV industry vets and one SEC source that I met many years ago at SEC Media Days, he told me that if there was an SEC team that would join the conference, that would be coveted by the conference, it would be North Carolina. It wouldn't be Clemson and Florida State, which have been the two biggest vocal teams trying to get out of the ACC. And I have shared that a gazillion times over. But whether it's North Carolina or whoever, you know, if the SEC wants to expand, they could do it. Now, Greg Sankey in interviews have said we are fine with 16. And I do think he strongly believes that. But North Carolina, holy crap. They add a lot to you in terms of basketball, and they might add something in football with, you know, the greatest football coach of all time, arguably, joining the conference. Oh, yeah, I also had Jalen Hurts in my biggest money league today. Ugh. No bueno. No bueno. Yeah, Chance, Alabama is a big thing because they don't want to lose the Tennessee rivalry. Man, I still think Arch is a better guy to get them through, but yours did some good things. But Jaden Blue, holy crap. Jalen says BTJ was clutch for him today. Man, no. That's the weirdest thing about, like, a lot of these fantasy leagues that I was in. I was heavily invested into Brian Thomas Jr. Heavily invested into Jaden Daniels. But I wasn't heavily invested into Saquon Barkley. And that's the guy that really did me, and I really didn't have any Saquon in any of my best ball leagues, and that crushed me. It buried me, honestly. That's why I got my ass kicked. I had a good bit of Jamar Chase, but it's hard to get him because he goes so early. And I didn't have enough Derrick Henry. I kept taking a couple of guys in that range over him a lot, which was stupid. But Saquon, if you didn't draft Saquon Barkley, you were screwed. It basically came down to that. He was that big of a league winner. And if you do a lot of drafts and you don't ever take them, you're going to run into issues. Tyler, what's good, bro? All right, we'll take a few more. I'm just telling you right now. Do not let Joe Burrow get into the playoffs. Do not let Joe Burrow get in. The Ivana Todd Graves courtside today. Let's go. I had a lot of Jahmyr Gibbs as well. Man, it's deflating when you spend so much time. So, like last year, I did pretty well. And I made a decent amount from my fantasy, but it wasn't a life-changing amount. So I tried to win that life-changing amount of money, and I got my ass kicked. Kicked. Yeah, I think they do need to make it next year. But it depends, you know. If LSU pulls an Ole Miss and lose and beats every team by double digits, but they lose three games by one possession or less, then you just got unlucky. Pegasus, thank you so much for the super chat, for being the best jersey number analyst around. Oh, you want to talk about jersey numbers? Man, don't get me started, bro. It is everything. That will be my biggest talking college football point until I leave this earth, that jersey numbers do matter. They do. If they didn't, why would every single player known to mankind change to a single digit right when they get the opportunity to? They do it. Whoever your team's equipment manager is, you really need to ask yourself, is this guy really worthy of a single digit? Okay. Brayden Swenson was number 13. He switched to number 4. He was worthy. All right. Ask yourself if this guy is a single digit playmaker. Make them have to earn it. Well, I'll send this to him, Bert Boy. I will. Let's go to Donald. I was a linebacker tight end in high school. I switched from number 55 to number 2. Let's go. But let me ask you this, Donald. You could be as completely honest as you possibly can. Did you deserve it? Were you a real single-digit playmaker? Or were you just a special teamer? I wasn't a single-digit playmaker. I was a pass rush specialist. I did not deserve it. I didn't. Didn't even ask for it. I knew I wasn't that guy. I wasn't that guy. Was I good in football? Yeah, I was good. I hung out with some of my high school teammates last night. But was I that guy? I was not a single digit. Sorry. What's the best digit? Well, 1. That's the one that's the most coveted. That's what I do. It drives me crazy. Like, in order for you to wear Uno, you better be at least, like, I don't know, CJ Daniels level good. See, we got a good Uno. But Aaron Anderson in year 1, I was like, oh God. Is he really Uno? But now he's Uno. I'll see Kayshawn had himself a day.
Let's go, Kayshawn.
Line zero, Ollie Gordon, shout out. Let's go to Sibley coming in hot. I was getting ready to sign off. We'll keep it going. Merry Christmas to you, Sibley. Nick Saban says that if things continue, SMU, Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, and Texas A&M will be top shelf at Bama, and LSU will be less competitive. Thoughts? Yes. Well, from someone pretty reputable that is related to a Fortune 500 company heir. Okay, so I had lunch with this person roughly a month ago. All right. And I had always heard that SMU has deep pockets. Y'all, it might seem that SMU is not ready for the big stage because they weren't. They were very lucky to get into the playoff. You know, they didn't really have that playoff resume or that playoff win that you would like to have seen from a playoff team. But holy crap, they are rich. They are so rich. And, you know, they were always, to me, one of those sleeper teams. You know, I said that on here many moons ago. I can't wait for an AI where I could just search all the different live streams to find these takes. But SMU has, when it comes to, I have it written down here somewhere from the meeting, when it comes to $100 million alums, SMU has roughly 200 in their alumni. They were able to pay to get into the ACC. They paid a pretty large sum of money to get into not one of the big two conferences, the ACC. Y'all, they're stacked money-wise, and they got a coach that they believe in. So Foot will be on gas, and they'll keep doing what they're doing. I think they're a real player. Ohio State, yes, but they also have, you know, tradition and that Ohio State brand. A&M, of course. But really, Texas and Oregon, I mean, simply, obviously, you know, Texas better than anyone. You know, when you really look at these teams, though, a lot of it is the corporations that are involved, right? Texas, you know, Austin is just such a big innovation hub. And Oregon, of course, has that Nike money, and Phil Knight will spend whatever it takes to get his team to the top level. But will Bama and LSU be less competitive? I don't think so. I don't think so because the brand still matters, right? Like, they're still going to get, and they still make so much money that they're going to still get the best players out of high school recruiting in the portal. Like, both of these schools will continue to top recruit in the top 10 nationally. All right? So does being the highest bidder matter? Yeah. That's why Ole Miss had the team that they had this year. A really, really, really good football team. The best team that I saw this year. But, you know, Bama and LSU, to me, I just don't see a world where either one of these teams fall off. I just don't. But I'm telling you, man, dude, SMU, they're stacked, man. They're stacked, and they were deep in the Happy Valley. Deep. They've got money. If alumni money were to matter, Harvard is tops. All right. Kind of, sort of right. But it depends on what you want to do with your money. Is football the single most important thing to Harvard? No, they don't really even have athletic scholarships. You know, if we're really wanting to talk about NIL and who wants to be the highest bidder and really build super teams, one team that never gets discussed that actually has some recent history with success is Stanford. Stanford is loaded, absolutely loaded. And they are a school of the elite academic schools that have a lot of athletic success. They care about sports. So if Stanford really wanted to be a player, they could. But it's not every team's MO. It's just not. Let's see. I told you a lot of this money's corporate, and oh yeah, T. Boone Pickens. Could you imagine? Oh God, if you, man, that's actually a really good point. Oklahoma State would be stacked. Tennessee's got really good NIL. They do. They are organized with their NIL. Now, are they the deepest? No, they aren't. But they feel pretty good about their coach. And, you know, one collective person I spoke to in Pac-12 country, said that, yeah, you know, your individual contributions do add up, but it really is, you know, the big wigs, the Michigan girlfriend of an Illinois grad buying Bryce Underwood. I do also see a world where college football teams are owned by corporations. So there you go. We'll take a few more here. What if we had a Jaden Daniels Joe Burrow Super Bowl, a rematch from earlier this year? Let's run it back. I don't know if we'll be talking about the Pelicans anymore. For the end of eternity. Dude, Ohio State fans, dude, go read the comments that they have posted under my first video, okay? I complained about one misholding call against Tennessee. The entire video was me praising Ohio State, them being a far better coach team and just a far better team. I bring up one missed call. Acknowledged that there was missed calls against Ohio. Ohio State fans are so dumb. They're so dumb. Tell him, Pierce. It's sad, man. Yeah, send it. Casino money. You're going to watch college basketball? Okay, nothing wrong with that. You know, the thing that really stuck from the Tennessee standpoint, once again, I really dove deep into, like, the entire, like, Tennessee lore. They had so many people spend all that money to go up there and watch that. Ugh. Ugh. Man, I think Bryce Underwood is really good. Sorry. I do.
No, I'm Pegasus. You get the last take before we go. Since you're one of three supers tonight. Here we go, Jared, Pegasus, Sibley. I have a really deep sweat in one of these fantasy games, so I'm trying to avoid taking a look at Dallas. You get it. Floor is yours, bro. So excited for Braylon Moore, man. So freaking excited. All right, Pegasus, this better be a good take. Oh, God, it's a shitty one. Ugh. And you forced me to demonetize my whole stream. Pegasus, why would you do this? Why? You just want to freaking sanitize? No. We need the snow. We need the rain. Sorry. We need elements. God. Just lunacy. Lunacy. From Pegasus. Crazy talk. God. Yeah, but he didn't slip and slide. What are you talking about? All right. Big shout out to the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth Experience. They're the ones that make PHL special, along with the NOPOD and along with the NoOffseason.com network. It is power out. LSU, boom! Top super chatter tonight is Sibley, and tonight we are doing meatballs. Let's go.